Welcome, everyone, to the Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek, your official, unofficial voice of the Marvel Cinematic Community. My name is Matt, and joining me is a guy who's smart and resourceful, but also a bit of a loose cannon. It's Pete. Hello, Pete.
Over-enmeshment is unhealthy. The Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek for episode 209, Big Shot, is brought to you by Curried Goat. Don't touch it, because dirty cops like to eat clean.
They're so bad, Pete. Good news, Pete. Here we are. The return of God Friended Me just a couple days ago. We podcasted that. Another new one next week. And also, Pete, end of next week, is that the return of Star Trek Discovery?
Can't come soon enough. But what do you say we get into this Runaways recap?
Take us to it, Pete.
Outside the Gordon Hotel, the rest of the Runaways and Livy debate going in after Molly. AWOL puts her in an SUV and they follow, calling Carolina to join them. Molly taunts AWOL, who tased her, but doesn't make the rules. He just enforces them as one of Flores's little underlings. Flores arrives and dismisses AWOL. He's an old friend of Molly's parents. He wants to bring her and her friends home, but she similarly mouths off to him. He's prepared to hurt her with a machete to get information when she breaks out of a second pair of handcuffs. The kids arrive and Chase breaks open the door with the Fistigons to find Molly holding Flores above her head. She body slams him and they leave. In the car, Molly remembers Flores took her phone and they could be tracked. They toss their burners out the window. Carolina meets Livy, who thinks their dinosaur is bionic. Alex thinks Livy should come back home with them. A drone seems to follow them above. At the hostel, Alex tells Livy how they came to find it and shows her Alexville. He doesn't have a room yet because he's spending all his time with a cool girl from Compton. Her phone goes off and it's Tamar. Alex warns AWOL could be tracking them, but she's hesitant to throw away memories of Darius and evidence. And footage from the hospital. Alex plays it and confirms AWOL did the drive-by. He can save everything, but Livy has plans to destroy her phone, and Alex will make it look like it's in the mountains of that third world nation, Wakanda. Alex plans to use Little Fish AWOL to get to the big fish of his parents. She agrees, but demands no more secrets, and she wants to meet the dinosaur. The drone is seen in the twilight outside, emitting some type of mist. It flies over Old Lace, and she sneezes. Flores confronts Pride about their secrets and their kids. He's angry they sent him in unprepared, and the kids are coming after Pride. They're on to Darius's murder. Jeffrey tells Flores to find their kids. How silly they were to think Pride could end. Victor proposes they build their own weapons to ensure their safety and bring the kids home. Robert agrees to help. Gert is perplexed at Old Lace's sudden illness and refusal to eat. Molly goes to get crackers and runs into Chase, who tells him he can still help Gert even though they're not a couple. Chase goes to see Gert, who woke up next to Deinonychus vomit. She wonders if it was something she ate and apologizes about not telling him about applying to college. They agree to start over by figuring out what's wrong with Old Lace. Livy wants to go home because Tamar is probably worried. They are going to stop at a Caribbean restaurant where AWOL just happens to hang out. Alex wants to bring everybody but not tell them who could show up there. They arrive at the restaurant and AWOL shows up right away in a 45-minute episode demanding his food because he's there every day. The others don't like Alex's small fish eats big fish plan. Alex approaches AWOL to talk man to man, touching his curried goat with an offer. AWOL pulls his gun and demands everybody leave the restaurant. Mitch, whoever he is, also draws down on them. A sideways gun holding, cliche spewing AWOL tells them he could kill everyone in there and get away with it. Nico uses the staff to pause AWOL and the strike team so they can escape. Outside, Chase and Gert suggest Alex drop his plan, and he brings Libby home. The Wilders head to Tamar's as Victor and Robert work on a tranquilizer dart modeled after the red-tailed hawk. Robert learns Janet translated the abstract, and Victor tells the wizard tech owner its technology far beyond his grasp. Janet comes in and wants to be included on their think tank, and Victor happily complies. Flores chews AWOL out after the kids got away, but the tables turn and AWOL questions why he wasn't told about the runaway's abilities. Flores reminds AWOL he works for him after he picked him up on the dangerous streets of Compton. If AWOL doesn't listen to Flores, he'll find some other thug. Tamar tells the Wilders about the run-in the kids had with the strike team. Catherine eyes the baby whose father she killed. Tamar gives her word to call Jeffrey when she sees Alex. Inside, AWOL cuts a deal with Tamar. Tina becomes strangely obsessed with the cake and tries to tempt Robert. When he reminds her Nico killed Jonah, she tells him there must be consequences and hears distorted whooshing before catching herself on the table. Jeffrey draws down on Flores in a darkened parking lot and swears he's not gaming pride. It's AWOL who Flores swears he'll keep in check. At Tamar's, Libby and Alex find AWOL. Tamar blames them. AWOL wants revenge for being made to look like a fool. Libby cautions him, but Alex has another plan. Stacy has uncharacteristically locked herself in the lab to work on something alone and isn't wearing her glasses despite her astigmatism. She wants a snack and realizes she doesn't have her glasses after uncovering a drone. Old Lace is upset and Gert can't get her to calm down. Alex tells AWOL if he takes him to Pride, his friends will release the video of him shooting at Tamara's baby, and tells him he has footage to place him at the hotel the day Darius was murdered. If AWOL turns on Flores and Pride, Alex won't release the footage. AWOL tells Alex Flores has evidence on Pride, and he'll turn it over to him if he leaves AWOL and the strike team out of it. Livy kicks Alex out after striking the secret accord. Back at the hostel, Alex awakes to hear Libby tell the others about his deal with AWOL. They confront him about letting the strike team go free. Gert's tongue feels weird, and Alex finds out about Old Lace. He calls them hypocrites and leaves. AWOL informs Pride about Flores's cache of evidence connecting them to the murders of Destiny Gonzalez and Graciela Aguirre, but he proposes to take care of him in exchange for Flores's spot on the payroll. Then AWOL will bring their kids home. Flores arrives at the Caribbean restaurant to meet AWOL and is ambushed in the freezer. Alex can't find AWOL at the restaurant and is informed about the change of plans, but they're going to talk real soon. Carolina hears a female voice tell her she's been searching for her, but it wasn't Nico because they weren't talking. Carolina chalks the voice up to her imagination. Gert is hot and cold, collapsing with a wheezing Old Lace. AWOL informs the strike team he's running things now and breaks into Tamar's to abduct Livy.
Pete, as the Runaways continue to deal with the complete exit of Jonah, who in no way shall ever return, wink, let's talk baddies for this episode. Let's talk AWOL.
There's definitely a villainous vacuum after Jonah, in the way that we knew him, Matt, has exited the story. AWOL needs to go AWOL. There's just no other way to put it. I don't know this actor. I don't like this character. And it is a complete and utter cliche. I understand why they're using it. We're not meant to like him, but boy, this is just about the lowest hanging fruit I've seen in terms of writing for bad guys in all of Marvel TV.
It does make me wonder, what's the discussion in terms of, you know, we're going to have a character who is from Compton, you know, from the inner city. We're going to present him as a thug. We're going to present him as a side gun toting, you know, guy who's ready to sell out his boss and the police and this and that. I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is. I know that I wasn't super comfortable with AWOL's depiction in this episode, and he's in it nonetheless. So I guess the people running the show got to make that decision, but I was still not crazy about his presence.
The only thing you could possibly say is that here a minority character, you know, gets a foothold of power above somebody more established who, though he might be construed as Caucasian, Flores is Hispanic. So it's minority on minority corrupt crime. I mean, there's very little you can say positively about this storyline. Unlike what we see with Pride, and we've seen less with Jonah, there is no gray moral area with these characters. They are awful through and through. They're difficult to even watch. I mean, bring up Flores here, that he brandishes a machete and, all right, he doesn't use it on Molly, but the character says he's prepared to use it on an almost 15-year-old girl in order to extract information. This after having known her deceased parents and her adoptive parents. There's not one shred of redemption within any of these characters. I get it. They're one-note bad guys, but man, they are just about as cliche as you could possibly get.
Well, I will say to the writing credit of Flores, at least he's got the second dimension of, like, he's not just going to blindly follow orders. He wants more of the money. Like, that's...
Well, same can be said for AWOL. You know, he's trying to protect his back too, and they're both scheming. But, you know, being in the restaurant and I'm going to pull my gun and I can murder all of you in the restaurant and all these people just saw this happen. Yeah, there's a culture of fear and I get it. But, you know, you're playing a neighborhood off as the most violent possible place that the neighbors could be complicit with because violence. And I get it. There's a culture of fear, but at the same time, we all know that would never happen.
Particularly, you know, if we want to do a bit of a deep dive in terms of talking about LAPD and corruption and things of that sort, certainly historically, traditionally, you know, it's white corruption against the black community and things of that sort against the Hispanic community. But if you want to say, okay, by extension, this episode is taking a tough look at corruption inside police departments everywhere and happens to be the LAPD this time. Okay, fine. But as you say, there's not even like a writerly hand wave to be like, oh, don't worry, Lieutenant so-and-so is back at HQ to make sure that if people call 911 and say, there's a cop with a gun saying, I'm going to kill you all, inside this restaurant, like, Lieutenant so-and-so is going to make it go away. It's just kind of like, these things just seem to exist because the story says so, which usually suggests thin ice, particularly in a TV show universe. I don't mean it in like the MCU sense, but in this world that the show is presenting, we're like, yeah, telepathic link with a dinosaur girl, friends with half alien glowy girl, friends with et cetera, et cetera. All that's plausible, but corrupt cop and gangland violence is not credible. That means there's a problem in the presentation.
We remain in this lull after the outstanding seventh episode with the ship coming to the surface and the you know, climactic battle there with Jonah. And it just feels like we're sliding backward. I still think this episode was better than the previous episode, but man, not by much.
Pete, I see you've put Tamar on the list. What ill has this new mother caused, Pete?
Well, I mean, she did warn Livy not to cause any drama with AWOL that he's dangerous, but here he's in the house. She's let the spider in, and, you know, her days of dealing with Darius, with Jeffrey, and now with AWOL have wrought some serious consequences, and now her sister is abducted, presumably as bait, at the end of the episode.
And story-wise, it does rather undo the little mini arc of Tamar and Darius attempting to break the cycle of whatever you want to say, poverty, of gang mentality, whatever it might be. Darius unable to escape it ultimately, but Tamar left with this money, or left with the momentum from Darius, given the money by Pride, by the Wilders. This notion of, hey, there's bad people out there, but you can set your moral compass straight and work your way out. The story is undoing it. And again, if it was for some larger story plan of, because sometimes you can't escape these social things, then it would feel profound. But instead, yeah, it just feels like, because story wants to story.
It's trapped in a cycle. And I get that that's realistic at the same time. But here was a character who in the previous episode told us, well, you know, I'm going to be the queen and I'm going to build my own kingdom and I'm going to oppose you, Jeffrey. And, you know, I'm going to get what I and my child are due because of the hard work that my my child's father put in. And now we're back to, well, here's a dangerous male who is involved in her life because she is a single mother.
Well, Pete, let's move to some theories here. Now, me confused, Tina and Stacy acting all possessed and stuff. Me no remember strange balls of alien glow light. Me no remember Jonah's body hopping alien. Pete, why Tina, Stacy act strange?
When we look back at the great run of Runaways, we are not going to circle back to this episode. Because the gang storyline was straight out of 1994, and this storyline with Tina and Stacy acting strange is out of the worst Buck Rogers from the 70s.
Particularly since the show has put we, the audience, in a position where we are ahead of the characters. Now, that works in something kind of Hitchcockian, like, we know there's a bomb in the briefcase, but kindly old lady doesn't, and she doesn't realize that she's putting it on the train or something like that. And we're saying, no, no, no. Instead, it's kind of like, what? So there's something strange in the neighborhood. I don't understand what's going on. No, wait, I do understand what's going on. There were, I believe, three pink balls of light in an episode where Jonah appeared to die. And then in, like, literally the next scene, albeit of the next episode, there was, these aliens can hop from body to body. Like, there's not a mystery going on here. So
I think they really ham-fisted how to handle this. I mean, we're a Naked Gun bracelet beeping, I must kill the queen, scene away from this completely jumping the dinosaur.
Well, speaking of which, Pete, the magic drone that has hurt old Lace, who could that be from if not from Jonah, who, of course, is totally dead and the only one who knows about their location at the hostel?
And apparently how to inflict maladies onto dinosaurs, or because he slash they now possess Stacy's knowledge. I mean, it's that we have to draw all of these assumptions on top of the ham-handedness of, ooh, I will seductively eat cake. They don't know what they want to do, and they went for the drama of it instead of the storytelling of it.
Particularly with the cake thing, like, it's less of a mystery when the person eating the cake is describing it like some sort of creature who has never eaten cake before. Wink, right. Wink.
Right. And listen, this is not on the performer, because Brittany Ishibashi does a great scene there. I had tweeted at her that, you know, this is good. And, you know, they've kind of backed off of her in the last several episodes. So I'm excited for anything that here she gets to play essentially a different character. But what do we know from the previous episode? Okay, you're going to get invaded by the alien. You're going to begin to lose time. And then, you know, there's going to be this fight for control. And then you're going to be completely given over to the alien. All right. You know, I'm surprised they didn't give that to us in the previously on. Probably because people are binging this. But, you know, I've got to wonder, too, where's the third one? Okay. If we were under the assumption that it was Jonah and two aliens in the hole, is Catherine the other one who is possessed, inhabited, and her looking at the baby not the misdirect of, oh, she is confronted by the symbol and the result of her guilt here, of her act. But is it, you know, the child's play, the Chuckyism of, we're going to inhabit
that baby.
Why
are these things so miniature looking?
That, but I was going to say, we're going to inhabit that baby and have a long life there.
Well, time will certainly tell on that, Pete. What else do you have in the old theory bin?
We have to talk about the sin of AWOL and Flores not noticing Molly had already broken out of a pair of handcuffs. Oh, what? She has powers and now I'm above her head? Like, how did she hide that she already had a pair of bracelets on that had broken chains on them, having broken them in the previous episode? Yeah, she got tased. But, you know, apart from being cliche, are these bad guys also blind? Is this evil Daredevil?
I mean, again, I don't mean to beat a dead horse here, but it seems to circle back to the writing. You know, 'twas the script that made them not notice.
What about these drones and this mist, Matt? Is this Mr. Fuji Sand? Is this, well, you know, we need to make old Lace sick, or is there some larger thing happening here?
I mean, I think if there is a larger thing, who is biotechie, or who is techie and those things about biology, that would seem to be the Yorkses. And if we have a Stacy inhabited by aliens scene, I guess we could then infer that maybe, you know, her portion of her consciousness mixed with the alien consciousness sent the thing out. But if they can track, here's where I'm stuck, Pete. If they can track the dinosaur, and the dinosaur is usually near the one kid, and all the kids are usually together, well, congrats, you found a dinosaur. Go send in Pride or SWAT or whatever, or Flores and company, to go get the kids at least out of this particular area, you know, in the Hollywood Hills.
What is Flores's fate at this point?
I think he's probably done with, and we see AWOL Ascendant as hopefully not a B storyline for the next couple episodes.
How about this voice that Carolina heard? Is this the other alien? Or I'm going to suggest something else here, Matt. Is this Grandma? Is this Leslie's mother who we've not seen yet?
Could be Grandma, but I kind of just sense that she's going to be a character who's referred to but not seen. Side note, this is precisely the kind of thing I'm usually wrong about, so that probably means it will be Grandma. But what I keep focusing on is I believe that when the ship blew up, there were three purple-pink spheres. Then Jonah died. So if that count was correct, and if those three spheres were alien life forces, then we have four aliens potentially to account for. By my count thus far in this episode, I would say Jonah still at large somewhere, probably some sort of triumphant return at, you know, in the next couple episodes.
But is it a Botox convention right now, picking his next host?
But I would say my estimate is that the three spheres are now inhabiting Tina and Stacy, and now this voice that we're hearing at the hostel, whether it's in a body form or not, I don't know.
And then last for me, Old Lace and Gert. I think the name there really hitting you over the head, straight up ETing at the end of this episode.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen the psychic connection between them. It certainly makes logical sense that if Gert can send signals to Old Lace, when ill, can send them back. Does it make it less of an ET influence if they name check it? I mean, it ultimately, it's, you know, it's not like, oh man, Pete, nobody ever thought of an alien comes to the planet and or is a Jesus Christ metaphor for a young boy. Again, we kind of keep circling back to it. Does, however, feel a tad familiar.
Well, never too familiar, always friendly, Matt, are the good people of patreon.com/fantasticgeek.
Pete, one day, many millennia from now, when our disembodied heads living in jars are finally sent to the great beyond, there will still be a Fantastic Geek out there. And that's because our digital voices shall live perhaps as long as that of Jonah, due to those that give to patreon.com/fantasticgeek, making sure that brick by brick, that spaceship, if I can mix metaphors, because I really don't want to say wall, Pete, but that diode by diode, our voice spaceship gets built and lasts forever.
Whether you are at the Flores level, where we just hand you envelopes of content, or you're at the AWOL level, where, you know, you're trying to move your way up, everybody who contributes gets exclusive podcast content, and hopefully you won't need to involve yourself in a massive corruption scandal in order to be able to contribute.
Big thanks to those who continue to support us. We are so proud to be listener supported as always. So thank you. Pete, let's now talk some feedback. We've been a little down on this episode. No doubt our pal Fred from the Netherlands is going to give us a boost with his thoughts on Runaways 209. Are you ready for it?
Absolutely.
Hello, Matt and Pete. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback from Runaways Season 2, Episode 9. First off, I have to admit that after rewatching Episode 8, it was much better than I initially thought. Last feedback I said about Episode 8 that it was a kind of erratic and that there were too many storylines in it. Well, it's still a little bit true, but after seeing it a second time, it was much better. In that sense, this episode 9 was much better structured. I loved, of course, in the beginning, how Molly lifted Detective Flores and just dropped him on the floor. That Detective Flores is indeed doing what I fully expected. Namely, when Leslie told him in a previous episode that it was his last envelope, I was fully expecting he would pressurize the Pride group and that he had enough evidence to put them under his thumb. It was a quite nice muscle scene, testosterone-filled scene between him and Jeffrey at the Pride meeting. It was really a scene that took 4 or 5 seconds where they were just saying nothing and looking at each other very closely and intimidating each other. I was really wondering if Livy is going to join the team for a longer time. Well, I think at least for a few episodes she will be in the team. And I think it was very strong of her to come back to the underground mansion to tell the other ones that Alex didn't include them. I also found it very strong of Livy that when Alex was suggesting to go to the restaurant without telling the others that Evil would be there, that she said, Alex, I just met them. I'm not cool with lying to them. So why is this Alex doing this? Is this a story trope, a story purpose? And the feedback he gets from the group later is very appropriate. And another scene I really could appreciate was Nico with her cake. Oh, you're bad enough to me, bad enough that we
always have something to get over. Oh, are you eating cake? I thought you were supposed to be upgrading the scanning software for these monitors.
Why? When there's cake.
What is Stacey York doing, which Dale is not involved in? We see on a work table this drone. Is there something she is doing that has to do with the sickness of Gert and Old Lace? Is the voice that Carolina hears her mother? In episode 7, young Leslie is talking to Jonah about her mother.
I'm so very sorry.
Thank you for coming. You always seem to be around at just the right time.
My father, your mother, they've been like family to me.
I wish she was here.
Your mother's a complicated woman.
Well, shouldn't we tell her what happened? I need her.
She's been banished. She wants no part of the church. When she rejected it, she rejected you.
Okay, many other topics to discuss, but time's up. This was Fred from the Netherlands, aka at Petrified Fred. 75 followers, can't be wrong. I especially thank James and Liam Hoffman for following me on the Twitter machine. I'm Fred. Who are you? Do you have a bionic dinosaur too?
Pete, Fred never letting us down with his insight, his humor, the entire Fred package.
Yeah, I do want to clarify. He said Nico. I think he meant Tina with the cake there.
With so many characters, it's easy enough to be tripping over names, to be sure. Pete, Livy wanting to be honest. That's something that Fred zeroed in on. Perhaps another future Runaways team member in the future? Question mark.
I mean, we've had her earlier than we had Topher, the influence of two other outside members to the group this season. I don't think they'll add anyone on a permanent basis, but it's nice to see them work with some, play better with others than others.
Pete, continued discussion here. Tina, Stacy. How much of them is them versus the alien threat, which we are positing?
Well, we're seeing the fight within them. Tina, you know, regaining control here. Why is there frosting on my finger? Stacy, where are my glasses? I mean, you know, whatever, wherever the other one is there going to be a similar type of reveal? We'll just have to wait and see.
Some other thoughts here from listeners. Pete, got a tweet from our pal DJ Black, who says, guess I should start my Punisher rewatch right after I finish Runaways while also listening to the Fantastic Geek Punisher podcast. So, Pete, we're recording this a little early. As we are recording this, speculation that it will be mid-month that Punisher hits, which chronologically will be right around the time the Runaways podcast is wrapping up. So it'll be busy, not just on our end, but busy listening on the listener's end.
Yeah, and then add to that the two other shows that will be live at the same time, and God Friended Me and Star Trek Discovery, and you know, we just brushed up against 160 podcasts in 2018. Does not seem like it's really going to be a hard thing to get back around that number for 2019.
Especially with some of the things that we have planned. Oh, I don't want to say too much, Pete, even though it is the new year. One more tweet, this from Henry David, that's at Funlord Henry, who notes, rewatching season one of Runaways this week and listening to that season's podcast, then getting to season two for the next 2 weeks. Can't wait to listen to this latest batch of podcasts. So, little reminder, Pete, that not everybody watches all the same time, especially for these binge drops here, but people continuing to enjoy what we have to say.
Hey, you watch it at your own pace. Or don't watch it if you don't like it, but Fantastic Geek will always be there with our content for you to have that discussion. Same can't be said for everybody, Matt.
Yeah, Pete, you gotta make the podcasts to talk about the shows. Otherwise, you don't get a seat at the table there. Pete, how can people join in on the discussion? We're in the home stretch here, Runaways, looking ahead to Punisher, looking ahead to Star Trek Discovery, continuing to talk about God Friended Me. No, we're not overloaded, not one bit. How can people be in touch with you?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, PieterJKetelaar, KetelaaR, 10,279 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I'm personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, do be in touch with the podcast. Comment on FantasticGeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, and Gmail, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/FantasticGeek, all one word, with the PH, like it today.
Well, Pete, we will be back on Friday to talk Runaways episode 210. And oh my goodness, Pete, next week we wrap up these episodes. Of course, week after that, you know, we'll do a season two wrap, of course. But the end in sight, and it has been a very rewarding season thus far. Hey, writers, with four to go, let's pick up the pace here a little bit. Let's improve some of the quality. Pete, we will find that out soon. With that, I will say adios to all our listeners and give you the final word.
Who's hungry? I was arrested.